Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Dr. John Endres. Let's get into the first news story of today. And this is, well, so I had a former colleague when I was a DA counselor, Carlos de Rocha, who is from Bez Valley, and he's a very hardworking and very charismatic counselor. And he likes to paint slogans on his van as he drives around his ward. And recently there was a Daily Maverick profile on him, the latest slogans on his van. Really great guy. But a few years ago, when he started doing this, the first message he ever posted on his van was just the word rats. And then underneath it would say, "Mayor, get the rats out of my ward." And that message, I think, would resonate very much with many people who live in Joburg today, particularly Helen Ziller, who recently carried out a rather amusing campaign visit in Alexandra, in Johannesburg. Helen Ziller went to the Alexandra Magistrates Court to go and do a sort of a campaign stop, look at it, speak to people there, and talk about the poor state of the city. Normally, the area is really bad, filth everywhere. People, there are chairs and tables from various restaurants in the area that have like spilled out onto the sidewalk. There's sewage running down the street. There's illegal hawkers. There's trash and rats. But mysteriously, as she arrived, all of this had disappeared. Now, it turns out that the city had gotten wind of perhaps her visit and also a later planned visit by the EFF to outside the magistrate's court in Alex. And had done a quick cleanup. Helen said that, quote, "They obviously knew that we were coming, and they've made a big effort to clean up the space a bit. The space is still filthy, and the sewage is still flowing." She said that the water supply interruptions have caused a massive health hazard, and, quote, "We've seen dying rats and other things here," and she pointed to a huge dead rat in the ditch at the front of the building. So the cleanup wasn't that good. and there was supposed to be, there's supposed to have been R1 billion allocated to fixing Alex. Alex is one of the more depressed, dysfunctional townships in Johannesburg. It the properties are very small. A lot of the people there are very poor. It's not a great place to live. And Ziller was essentially promising to make life better there. John, this whole story of, you know, the sort of rush to clean up things before the sort of opposition politician gets to the site, it feels very sort of third world dictatorship, quickly, you know, pushing all the poor people off the roads before the BBC film crew arrives. You know, it's a thing you might see in like some sort of communist country in the 80s. what do you make of this story?
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I also get. It's noteworthy, I think, that the interests of residents or voters do not matter enough to the city administration for it to, you know, clean up a sidewalk or fix, you know, broken road surfaces or make sure that rodent infestations get handled. It actually takes a visit from somebody that they are worried about might become the next mayor for something to get done. And then I think the thing that does get done is very last minute, very minor, doesn't really change things substantially. And that is a pattern that is kind of becoming visible across Johannesburg at the moment. So, you know, we are currently seeing road markings being applied, which we haven't seen for a long time. But in some areas, you now actually have road markings. But you'll also see that they sort of go down the road and then they just stop. I think they run out of paint or something. And so part of the road is marked and the rest is just left. On my way to drop the kids at school in the mornings, I drive through a little sewage stream every morning. There was a Johannesburg water crew there last week and they fixed it for a day. And the next day it started running again. And that's what things are like here at the moment. And I do get the impression that Helen Ziller's presence is creating a certain sense of nervousness, which is good because you do want city administration, city officials to be a little bit worried about the voters and what they might do, such as removing them from power. And I think that fear is becoming quite real now to many of the not so good officials and councillors in the city. And that's a good thing. So all credit to Helen Ziller that she's able to put a bit of the fear of God into the hearts of inept officials and councillors. Nick?
And this isn't the only campaign story. And I think it's also a testament to how Ziller is capturing the, you know, managing to sort of be out on an issue around, you know, what's going on in the city almost every day, almost every week. And so far ahead of the election too, the DA unveiled a billboard today, which has this sort of, it looks like an AI generated photo of Panyaza Lesufi in his sort of work clothes being showered. And it says, the ANC showers in hotels. You have no water. Vote DA to put water in your taps. And this has so irritated the ANC that they have already said that they are considering legal action against the DA to take down this board. I'm not quite sure on what grounds, but this is also not a great sign when you're just leaving sort of so many openings available to sort of hit you in the lead up to an election.
Yeah, it's almost too easy for Helen Ziller and the DA, right? Because they don't even have to go looking for material. They sort of stumble across it every single day. It just stares them in the face. And I think Helen Ziller is making quite good use of the opportunity. And we'll see how it goes. Also see that she's sent a job application to residents associations. So she's trying to get in front of them and explain what her pitch is to become mayor. But the residents associations in Johannesburg are quite nervous about this, because they are apolitical and they don't want politicians, you know, bringing their messages into the communities, because that leads to friction. But she's positioning it as a job application. That's quite clever. So she says, it's an 85 billion rand enterprise that's recruiting a new CEO. Wouldn't you like to know what the qualifications of the CEO are and what their plans are? She's the candidate. And so she says, I'll answer your questions. I'm putting myself before you. You can ask me anything you like, and then you can judge whether you want to support my candidacy or not. And it may be that the residents' associations are going to accept her offer and so bring her in and open up the opportunity for other candidates to do the same and say, look, you know, we've had one job applicant for the job of mayor of Johannesburg. If there's anybody else out there who wants to do it, we'll give them a platform as well. They can come and tell us what their plans are. And that would actually be a really good thing, I think, for political competition and for voters to see what their candidates offer.
Yeah, on that point of some residents' associations, you know, desperately wanting to be non-political, I think this is a very pervasive attitude in South Africa, particularly in suburban areas, but in other spheres too. And you can see it in business and various civil society organizations and such. And, you know, I understand it. You know, you don't want to everything to turn into kind of political party, partisan chest bumping and all that kind of thing, which can get very boring and pointless very quickly. But at the same time, you know, politics is actually an important part of society. It is an important part of how we live and make our lives and decisions. And shying away from it doesn't make it disappear. I think if actually you want to be a responsible sort of civil society organization, you actually need to engage. And that doesn't mean you have to say, well, okay, we're all going to support Helen Ziller, but you can at least, you know, talk to her as she is, considering it, she's a major figure. I mean, if Dada Marrero wants to come talk to you too, why don't you? I mean, I think that might be a bit more difficult, but it's, you know, to me, it is actually one of the reasons why I think South Africa has ended up in the place we're in currently, where we have a population whose views are not really that well represented by most of the political class. And that's partly because there's been this desire to sort of say, oh, no, politics is for politicians. It's like somehow separate from the rest of us. The truth is, it's not.
I get that. But I think, like with the residents' associations, what I've seen from personal experience is, you know, these are volunteers and they're trying to fix local issues around potholes and water and so on. And they know that if they allow this dimension of combative politics to enter this kind of community forum, it will distract attention completely away from what they're trying to do. And so I think they're not really scared of engaging with politics, but they want to ring fence it and sort of keep it apart from the residents' association type of work.
No, my argument is that you can't really sort of ring fence it. I mean, I've seen so many things where, you know, residents' association, let's say there's a fence that's broken and needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And they'll bang their heads against the wall for ages with the council trying to do this and that and this. And then they'll talk with the council and eventually something will sort of happen, maybe. But next week, there's another piece of fence that's broken. And after spending months working on one piece of infrastructure, the next thing sort of falls over. And this kind of little piecemeal, I'm going to paint this park bench and then just hope that that's enough to turn my area around, I think doesn't mean you have to be partisan, but it means, I think, that you have to seriously engage with what residents actually need in order to have improved lives. I think that represents them better. You know, you have to say, we want the city to spend this much more on the budget, not just simply sort of collect donations to put up a fence, to, you know, to repair the fence in your area, or to bribe the local city officials to do their jobs, which is so often what ends up having to happen. In good volunteer people step up. I think they limit the scope of their activism too much, and the result is that it's not as effective as it could be. Any final thoughts on this one before we move on?
Yeah, maybe just this idea, which I think that what Helen Ziller is doing is bringing a breath of fresh air into municipal politics in Johannesburg. And I think by, you know, opening herself up, or sort of, you know, exposing herself to the opinion and the judgment of the voters, she's setting a bar for other politicians. You know, so if you're Herman Mashaba, you should be doing the same. If you are Dada Marrero, you should be doing the same. You know, whoever you are as the candidate. You know, the voters are ultimately the people that get you elected, and you need to know what they think. So by all means, you know, you should have town halls, have meetings. Yeah.
It shouldn't be crazy to think that Dada Marrero would do exactly the same thing. In fact, he should be way ahead of Ziller in doing these sort of things. But it is, and I think this is a dysfunctional part of our politics, is that sort of so much, politicians are often, I think, kind of a little bit abstracted from people. And I think it's worse in the governing party, particularly in the ANC, where you know the mayor or the MEC was usually sort of 15 bodyguards between you and him. And I understand that sometimes, you know, people are unreasonable and community engagement can involve lots of people complaining about silly things or whatever, but you know, I still think that the politicians here are missing a trick. And good up on Ziller for showing them up.
Yeah. And also showing how hardworking she is. You know, to know how many wards there are in Johannesburg, but there's many. And there's even more residents' associations. So it's going to be a big job if she gets all those invitations. Could be 135 wards, yeah. And multiple RAs per ward. So, yeah.
Yes. All right. So let's move on from the local to the national and international. Which is that the ANC has tweeted out that ANC First Deputy Secretary General Nomvula Mokonyane of Zondo Commission fame will sign the condolence book in honor of His Eminence Ali Khamenei at the Embassy of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And they've announced the time. I think it was just before we recorded this. So the time was 12:30 on Thursday, the 5th of March. John, look, I mean, at least Ramaphosa himself wasn't being sent to go and sign that book publicly. But this just, to me, speaks to the unseriousness of the ANC. Whatever you think of that military engagement in the Middle East by the US and Israel and their allies, Khamenei was not a person that any leader of any democratic state should ever express condolences for. He was an autocrat. He was a theocrat, and he was a vile, murderous character. And not only is this morally reprehensible, but it's strategically incompetent. What do we get? Well, the Iranian regime, which maybe it won't be there in a month, we don't know. Maybe it will, maybe it won't, is, you know, we're going to curry favor with them. And we're going to irritate all the countries currently in conflict with them, which doesn't just include the US and Israel. It also now is increasingly including various European countries who are some of South Africa's actual closest allies on the world stage. Is this some sort of half-baked attempt to curry favor with China? Is this just, you know, burnishing anti-Western credentials? What do you make of this, John?
And also adding, of course, the Gulf states, you know, so which are big sources of capital and potential investment. So now they're also being, sidelined by the South Africans, expressing their condolences to Iran. And it is, I think, again and again, highlighting how this nominal, non-aligned status doesn't really live up to that name, because we see unequal responses and reactions from South Africa to global events that illustrate where its true passions lie. And it also gets the impression partly that South Africa here is driven in its foreign policy conduct more by passions and feelings than by interests and cold-hearted analysis, rational analysis, which is what you would expect them to do. I think that South Africa is probably standing more closely by Iran than I think even Russia, I think even China, who are in a position to do far more to help Iran, but have been very reserved about doing anything, except to say, we monitor the situation with concern. I think the South Africans are leaning quite far out the window here. And as you say, it may be that the government that they've been so close to for so many years is no longer even around in a month's time or a few months' time. And then what will be the benefit of having made this investment in the relationship? So yeah, it is questionable.
I think once again, it's another triumph of ANC internal ideology and sort of, it's almost like a kind of teenage sticking it to the man. Look at how tough we are. We're not afraid of the Americans. We'll go sign the book. Okay, great.
Yeah.
What does this get us? And once again, South Africans are put last in the ANC's foreign policy, which is a recurring theme, I think.
And I do think that the Americans do notice, so we may think that this flies below the radar because, South Africa is small and far away. But as you pointed out in our pre-show discussion, instead of just going to sign the book, they post about it on social media. Let the world know about it. Yeah.
If you want to still, hug the Iranian regime tight, which I guess is a choice you can make, just don't tell anyone. Just go and show up. They'll know that you signed the book and they'll be happy about it. And maybe some enterprising journalist will discover it, a couple of weeks down the line. But that's not nearly, I think, the same kind of story. But announcing it publicly on your social media accounts, like I said, though, maybe there was some sort of, maybe they thought they were being strategic by sending the Deputy Secretary General rather than Bekele or Ramaphosa. If that was the case, though, I don't think it's really going to work.
Did you see, this is not actually part of our discussion, but Fikile Mbalula, I think, visiting Tanzania at the moment for a meeting of the Liberation Movements Association, whatever it's called. And this is just months after the Tanzanian election was, rigged and people got killed. And there he is embracing the leadership. So it does form part of a pattern, unfortunately.
No, it's the one of the more irritating things about our rhetoric around our foreign policy is that we often talk about having, human rights based policy or sort of policy in line with our constitution, which in theory I'm kind of quite open to. I have been known to flirt with an idealistic vision of foreign policy, and yet, most of that seems to be condemning Israel, condemning the US, and hugging every single autocrat in the world who has ever said anything nasty about the United States, which, let's just say that's not a very human rights-based foreign policy. I mean, I think it's still the case that the ANC Youth League often has pictures of Gaddafi on their T-shirts, which is just... I remember seeing that for the first time in university and I wouldn't say I was being shocked, but just sort of being kind of overwhelmed to see it in the flesh.
One of our colleagues calls the international relations the kind of safety blanket or Like a comfort blanket. Do you say that? Yes.
Yes,
so
I
you
said
are one. You are one of the colleagues. So I was not completely wrong.
Yes. Yeah, it's a sort of like, oh no, everything is so difficult overseas, so we're just going to go and denounce the West because it makes us feel good and safe and powerful, and
because like the world. Helen Zille is stumbling over dead rats in Alexandra. So like, what can we do? Well, let's go and sign the condolence book quickly.
And you know what? I think also it's part of ANC unity, right? And I think this is an overwhelming thing that I've noticed in so many of the stories that we talk about on the show, is that the ANC is at this point entirely dominated by its internal politics. I think one of the reasons that this is happening is not just the things we've talked about, but also because there's this perpetual fear amongst ANC leadership of being seen to sell out. Mm-hmm. So you have to constantly go and appease those sort of radical factions in the party and say, no, you see, look, we're still revolutionary fighters. And that complete obsession with internal politics means that the ANC can't make any decisions except about how to manage their own internal affairs, which is why the party is in such trouble.
Exactly, because imagine if you're a person in the ANC who thinks that BEE should be given up. Like, how long will you be able to hold that position? Because I think your colleagues are going to like eat you alive if you express that thought publicly.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our last story, and this is about the mayor of Ekurhuleni. So we covered news stories about him recently, about him reshuffling his coalition government. But now he's getting into a fight with News 24, which doesn't seem like a great thing to do when you're heading up to a contentious, difficult election. Mayor Akaza of Ekurhuleni has launched an urgent bid in the Gauteng High Court in Johannesburg to gag News 24 due to a number of reports they have published about the murder of a forensic auditor called Mpo Mafole, who was murdered last year after completing a report into irregularities around a 1.8 billion rand tender for chemical toilets in Ekurhuleni. So there were a number of investigative reports, including by Jeff Wicks, who was part of the whole uncovering the Tembisa hospital stuff. And those reports are very critical of Mayor Akaza, who they essentially say was around the scene of the crime. They say that he potentially interfered with the police looking into the matter, and basically they tie him to the sort of the crime and the events surrounding it. The mayor is very upset by this. And in his court filing said, I must indicate that these are serious allegations which impinge my right to dignity and the reputation of the officers I hold. Further, the respondent's conduct threatens my safety. I categorically deny these false and defamatory allegations. To date, the respondents have failed to provide justification for the publication. Instead, they are continuing with the publication of these false and defamatory statements as they failed to respond to my letter of demand, he said in his affidavit. He went News 24 to not just cease publishing on this topic, but also to remove the other articles and apologize. John, what do you make of the story? It seems like News 24 is going to fight with him, which is good that they're standing by the reporter, particularly one with credibility like Wicks. But what do you make of the story?
I think it's a continuation of that theme we established at the beginning and with our first story, which is a party that feels itself very much to be under pressure. The story, I think, was headlined Embattled Mayor, and that's probably right. He's facing lots of problems with keeping his coalition together. He's going to be worried about what the elections will bring, and now he's got investigative reporters on his back trying to figure out what he's done wrong. So I think he's feeling the pressure. That's why he's bringing this court case. I think it's good that News 24 is fighting back. The veracity of the stories, I guess, will emerge from the court case. And it would not surprise me that much to see him withdraw his case and say, let's just settle it somehow, because it's a distraction for him. And who knows, there might also be some truth to the allegations. Also see that the mayor has cited a journalist as a respondent in this case, Sikonati Manchancha, I think was previously the ESCOM spokesperson, and before that, a journalist. And it's a bit worrying when powerful politicians cite journalists in their personal capacity, because that does feel a bit like targeting and trying to intimidate and silence critical journalists. So that's not something we like to see.
Particularly when you put this together with some of the stuff that's come out of the Matlanga Commission, where the head of the Ekurhuleni Metro Police, Julius Mkhwanazi, not the famous Mkhwanazi, the other Mkhwanazi, although I guess he's also famous now too, but anyway, is accused of all these connections to Kat Matlala, who's currently got stuff around attempted murder, and is accused of being connected to a whole bunch of crimes in the country. And you one really wonders. I mean, this is not a great environment. This really seems like the sort of mafiaization of South Africa has infiltrated Ekurhuleni. It's difficult to not come away with that conclusion from seeing all this reporting. What does that mean for our politics? I mean, this is, you sort of, I think we're getting towards the territory where you're a journalist or an opposition politician, you might be thinking to yourself, oh, this is a bit dangerous to make too much of a fuss in this area. I don't know. Do you think that's a founded fear?
I do think it is. And what's really concerning about it is the degradation of the fabric of society, along with the physical infrastructure of the country at the same time. And if you want to do something about that, there's not that much time left, I think, to do something about it, because these are the beginnings of intimidation and criminality, in the police, in politics, which I think are far more widespread maybe than people think. But for something to be done about it, it is getting kind of urgent. I think that the Helen Zille campaign is an important factor in that, because in Johannesburg, if she is successful, if she prevails and, comes close to majority or is able to build a coalition and able to reintroduce some accountability, some performance criteria, that will send an important signal. But if nobody does, then, I think it's all one-way traffic, and that's down. So somebody's got to make a stand. I'm glad she's doing that, and I hope more people will as well.
Yeah, no, it's important, even though it is rather risky at the moment. So you go and you look at the national provincial election results in Ekurhuleni. National provincial results can't be directly compared to local ones. The turnout is different. There's different issues on the table. So they're not, one must be a little bit careful when drawing too many inferences from them. But they do, I think, provide a bit of a suggestion of how things might go in the next local government election. ANC got 36% in Ekurhuleni, the DA 26, MK 14, the EFF 11, just under 12% actually, which shows that it's one of their, remains one of their sort of bastions. Quite difficult, I think, for the opposition, for the DA in particular, to unseat the ANC here, despite their relatively low vote total. Wouldn't be surprised if they drop towards 30% of the vote, maybe slightly below if they have a very bad election. But I reckon, the ANC will still be close to the biggest party, if not sort of tied for the biggest party in Ekurhuleni. What are your thoughts on where that's going? I mean, is the ANC maybe confident that they could be safe in that municipality?
They may be, and they may well be right. They might well be right. Because so far, I'm not sure if the DA has a candidate for Ekurhuleni. But it's certainly not somebody, I think, like Zille or Brink, who's got star power and can serve as a kind of nucleation point to focus attention on.
Sorry, you dropped for a second there.
I'm back now, I hope. Yeah, yes. So exactly. So I was saying that I think they're lacking the kind of candidate that can draw attention and focus attention on the possibility of change. And without that, it's going to be quite hard. So I think the party brand by itself is not strong enough to do that.
And you sort of, this is a question also for Johannesburg, but I think it also comes up in Ekurhuleni, which is, let's say the DA gets 30%, the ANC gets 30% in that Kurileni, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you might see a similar thing in Joburg where the DA gets, I don't know, 38%, 39%, somewhere around there. And the ANC is like kind of 30s as well, low 30s, mm-hmm. high 20s. Do they form a government together? And, you know, if this is the leadership of the ANC in that municipality, how does the DA form a government with them? Or does the ANC, is the ANC just definitely going to go back in with MK, EFF, all those other parties? I don't know. What? Obviously, we're a long way out, and it depends on the terms, but do you think the DA should consider making a deal with those parties if it doesn't get majorities?
In a Kurileni?
Yeah.
Tough call. That's really hard. At the moment, I'm not seeing a good way for the DA to do this and make a success of it. I think it would probably be a sort of a mission destined for failure in a Kurileni.
No. Especially if you're not the biggest party.
Yeah.
Which would make things more difficult.
I guess that's, unless they find a way to sort of get clear responsibilities assigned, and then you can get stuff done. But I think what we often have at municipal level in South Africa is responsibility without authority. And then nothing gets done, nothing happens. And until that problem is solved, that's going to be a very hard setup in a Kurileni.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for listening to the show. We hope you found it interesting. And we will be back tomorrow at 1:30 for the live show on The Daily Friend Show. Check us out then. Cheers, everyone. Have a great day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.